Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper.
Welcome back to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast, Groundhog's Day edition. Groundhog's Day edition. Just kidding. We are focusing on our nation today in the Volunteer State with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. This time, special guest, Larry Linton. But first, for more information about the Mill Creek View podcast, visit us anywhere you get your podcasts and socials at Mill Creek View, Tennessee. While you're there, please subscribe. It really helps us move up those charts and keep it free to you. And thanks for listening. Welcome to our People in the News episode, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we are talking with Larry Linton. Born in Okinawa, Japan, and the son of a U.S. Air Force veteran, Lawrence Larry Robert Linton II of Sevierville, Tennessee, was raised in San Angelo, Texas, and spent his teenage years in Cicero, New York. Before he joined the U.S. Navy in 1987, Larry and his wife, Denise, moved to Tennessee following his retirement from the military after serving for 30-plus years on submarines, support ships, a guided missile cruiser, as well as many shore duty stations. He saw duty in Great Lakes, Illinois, Groton, Connecticut, Charleston, South Carolina, Cape Canaveral, Florida, Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, Washington, D.C., El Paso, Texas, and Norfolk, Virginia. After completing his final sea duty assignment, he was hand-selected to lead a team of senior enlisted facilitators to deliver a one-time leadership seminar to senior enlisted and junior officers serving members of U.S. Navy and joint commands all over the globe. It was following his retirement and after watching the events in the political arena where our nation's biblical founding principles of the republic were being discarded for a godless pursuit of power and control by a ruling elite that he felt called to serve his country again. Larry realized that our liberties as citizens in this great republic are being eroded by the very government put in place to secure those same freedoms. The people we send to City Hall, county government, state legislatures, and Washington, D.C. are determined to no longer treat the electorate as their sovereign as designed by state and federal constitutions. Instead, the government that hates us are determined to rule us as their subjects. They accomplish this through lies, manipulation, and because the public has become apathetic to our role and responsibility as citizens in a republic. Although unsuccessful in the 2022 election for Tennessee House Representative, Larry continues to serve as a constitutional conservative advocate for the residents of his House district, which contains most of Sevier County, by working with like-minded individuals and organizations in and around East Tennessee. Larry and Denise currently reside in the Boyd's Creek Seymour area of Sevierville, Tennessee. Their daughter, Kelly, and her husband, Eric, have also set down roots in the Volunteer State in Sevierville and are working on starting their family. Mazel tov. Hopefully I did you justice, Larry. How are you today?
Just fine, Steve. How are you?
Good. It's freezing over here in Williamson County. Hopefully you're not having it as bad as we are, but it's cold outside.
No, but I just left North Dakota last week where the temperature did not get above freezing and the wind chill was like 30 below on certain occasions. So I'm happy to be here in 30 degree weather.
Yes, the grass is always greener and the snow is always colder somewhere else. Well, good to hear that you're back and safe. My compatriot, Brandon Lewis at TennesseeConservativeNews.com, endorsed you when you ran for State House District 12, running against incumbent Dale Carr. Not an easy task, obviously. Brandon called you a conservative constitutionalist who believes in the Christian-inspired founding principles and documents that established our constitutional republic. He also said you believe liberty is both a precious gift from our Creator and a great responsibility preserved for our future generations. So tell us, what is it about the Constitution that they are infringing on that irks you the most?
Well, you can name it, and the government is infringing upon it. So our federal constitution sets up within itself limits, right? Article 1, Section 8, its enumerated powers that it frequently operates outside of. You cannot point it. Just look around the room you're in right now. You cannot point to a single object in that room, and same thing here behind me, that the government does not play a large role or even a minor role, but a government plays a role in every part of our lives today, which was definitely not envisioned by our founding fathers. I mean, it's almost getting to the point where here, if this climate change stuff really gets enacted, they're going to tax the air we breathe, which I think is the only function left that government isn't involved in.
It's true. So, I'm hoping for a little global warming, as a matter of fact, because it's cold outside.
Global warming is good for crops, and so despite what everybody says, it's good.
That's right. But taxing our oxygen that we breathe and carbon dioxide that we exhale is not. And the trees get it for free. So we are in a two-party system. You ran as an independent, I believe, against an incumbent Republican in a 75-24 to one independent Tennessee, one independent out of the 99 representatives. Did you find the independent run liberating, or at least the outsider?
Well, it's got its pros and cons. I mean, the fact that I was not beholden to a political party, especially the Tennessee GOP, who I believe is down to my roots, is corrupt to the core. But by not being beholden to them and only being beholden to the Constitution, which every member, regardless of what political party you're a part of, should be beholden to the Constitutions and the oaths. So that was liberating. But what is terrible, I think, is the because of the apathy of the voter, the general apathy of every voter in the country is they only believe in the two-party system, Democrats or Republicans. They don't even investigate. I talked to somebody, a couple of people after the election was over with, a few members of my church and some members of the local community. I talked to them about, my run, and they were like, well, we saw that you were an independent, so we think you were a Democrat. Or you're going to destroy the system or take away the vote or split the vote, which is really weird because there was only an independent and a Republican on the ticket. There was no Democrat on the ticket at all. So it's the apathy that leads people to vote D or R, D or R only. They won't even investigate the candidates and see what's going on behind the scenes or what positions or principles that they have.
And the party is making it harder now because they wanted to pass a rule that says you have to have voted in three primaries. I've only been here for 6 months, which means I wouldn't even be able to become a member of the Republican Party of Williamson County because I hadn't lived here long enough. So just part of me says, oh, being a local and a native is a good thing, but barring people from participating in the election right after we went through this whole redistricting of five, where Andy Ogles ended up being the victor, but they wouldn't let Starbuck or Ortegas in. They're messing around with some pretty damaging things because it wasn't long ago that Tennessee was a Democratic state.
Correct. It's an extra constitutional requirement. I too would not have qualified for that three of the last four GOP primaries because I retired and moved here in 2016 or 17. So I couldn't have voted in that anyway. So the GOP would have probably had a hard time with me. In fact, they disqualified a candidate in Sevier County from running on the GOP ticket because of her age. She couldn't have voted in three of the last four, even though Scott Golden said that people that were too young to have voted would get a waiver. He denied the waiver request. She received the bona fides endorsements from the county GOP. The state still denied her. So it's these rules at the state GOP, which leads to my belief that the corrupt has really become the incumbent protection. They don't want true conservatives on there because they have control of their current crop of candidates.
So your family and you, no secret, I mean, you're proud of it, are devoted followers of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ and believe in the Christian-inspired founding principles that established our constitutional republic. Do you see things in Nashville living up to Christian ideals like Governor Lee ran on, or not so much?
None of them do. State, federal government, they do lip service to our Christian founding principles. I mean, our Constitution would not have been designed the way it was, and the state Constitution either, if it weren't for the fact of Christianity, right? The principles of freedom. Free will is a gift from our Creator. We are made in His image. We are imagers of God in that we get to exercise free will. Free will to worship Him and secure our eternal life, or not worship Him and secure eternal life in hell. So free will is the basic premise for our Constitution. And right now you can see that free will is anathema to the current operations and machinations of both major parties and all levels of government.
You're going to go down in history books as having run for office and seen under the hood of this during the era of COVID when the pastors and the churches really didn't step up to the plate either to hold these Christian, Republican, red state Tennessee values candidates accountable. they went the other direction. They hid.
Right. And that's a function of government by these 501c3 or c4 designations for religious organizations. So if they violate that, the government's going to come after them tooth and nail. So the church rolled over and showed its soft underbelly. The church, I'm speaking as a whole, as institutions, not the churches and the body of Christ, the people. But the churches themselves, most for the most part, rolled over and showed government its soft underbelly. I mean, I asked today, and if people go back and read our history books, about the Black Robe Regiment. Our church was, the Christian church was foundational in its support of the building of this country and freeing us from the tyranny of England. We don't have a Black Robe Regiment anymore, all because of the threatened purse string control. Again, government has inserted itself into every aspect of our lives and has done so through our wallets.
Yeah, they were more afraid of losing their tax breaks than they were of losing their parishioners' souls. You mentioned that, you know, one of the four constitutional amendments that did pass overwhelmingly was to reallow, I guess it had somehow been disallowed for a while, reallow clergy to actually run for office. So you were supportive of that?
I was actually unsupportive of that, but for a different reason. First of all, that requirement in our constitutional was deemed unconstitutional and unenforceable since the 70s. It was only added into the mix to make the brownie taste good because the brownie was full of all kinds of poop, right? The outlawing slavery, it was already outlawed. The right to work, it's already legal in this state. All of those constitutional amendments were passed not to benefit the individual citizen, but to benefit something or some other organization. They added that, hey, let's pass this amendment that cleans up the Constitution a bit, just to put a little salt or a little extra, make it savory when we taste those other three. So that's why I was opposed to that. I'm a firm believer that if there is any group of people that need a come to Jesus moment more than our government, I can't find it. So I'm a firm believer.
National government or our U.S. government, all government.
All government.
All the way down right to the city council. Yeah, sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know how they recruit them so easily unless they all decide to be trained at the same Marxist, I guess, capitalist Marxist trough.
Right. You
wrote, I find that those who still do evil to our country aren't on foreign shores. They are in the political parties and their many tyrants that control all levels of our government. In what ways has Tennessee strayed from the Constitution and representatives behaving unconstitutionally? Like, give me two or three.
Well, first of all, we can go back to the state GOP's rule about extra constitutional residency requirements. They've also instituted a pay for play. So if I was to run or request to run as a member of the GOP in the next election cycle, I would have to donate a fee of $500 to the state GOP so I could get the GOP's permission to run. So a couple of extra constitutional things there, pay to play and extra constitutional residency requirements. There's recently a bill now that Senator Gardenhire, who's a trans publican, I call these people trans publicans. They're not liberals, they're not Democrats. They're people that are pure straight up communists that slap a Republican after their name so they can get elected. He's sponsoring a bill that would give our sweat equity in a way to illegal immigrants for college tuition. That is an unconstitutional use of the taxpayer's sweat equity. And what better way or what better tool do the citizens, the free citizens, have to exercise their liberty than keeping their sweat equity, right? Keeping the fruits of our labor.
It's certainly taxation without representation if you are a legal citizen going to college versus one who's illegal and going to the same college for the taxpayer dime.
Exactly. And then here recently, I know my former opponent, my rival in the election, Dale Carr, he introduced House Bill 0004 right off the bat, like less than 30 days after he won the election, that would ease up the vetting requirements for visa holders, so they wouldn't have to do these vetting requirements for work. Now they said it's just to ease up things, but you know what? Who benefits from easing requirements on foreign workers? Well, first of all, it's businesses, right? So they don't have to wait the extra step time, pay the extra money to pay for the vetting of their foreign workers. The foreign workers benefit from it because they are able to skip or bypass a process. But the only person that pays for it is the citizens who now cannot compete with the cheaper labor. So what exactly are these representatives? Who are they looking out for? Businesses
They
and
aren't.
foreign
No,
workers or the people that
it's the only
elected
thing
them?
the Chamber of Commerce and the All Lives Matter folks can agree on, I guess, is this cheap labor that can come in and take jobs from regular citizens who are supposed to vote for them to keep them in office to do this. It's really a crazy thing, even in a state like Tennessee. You also said, I think the Constitution is the greatest contract government of the people ever created, and we are the only nation in world civilization to be based on liberty. I agree with that. When lawmakers infringe on our constitutional rights, they are attacking our liberty. How do we get better candidate quality to push Tennessee to the leadership of the conservative movement? Because you just described a handful that are not doing that.
I don't know. I mean, I guess platforms like this is how we have to inform the public. Mostly how we get there is by the active participation in our system of self-governance. Ever since the early 1900s, right around the time the 16th Amendment was passed, which gave government first cut of everything that we earn, the voter participation rate in national elections has hovered around 50%. If you go down to off-year elections, we're going down to 8 or 12%. Sevier County had one of the lowest percentages of participation by the electorate in this last off-year election.
Under 4%.
Right. So we got there by the apathy that is, it's so inherent in our system, but this apathy is also encouraged and emphasized by big government as well as by the both political parties. I mean, George Washington said it best. When it becomes these political parties will be the death of our nation because they are only concerned with party power, not constitutional limitations on their power.
That's right. And even the Heritage.org Foundation said that we were ranked number one in the country for voting integrity, but we got about 85%, which is only B plus, and that means that the other 49 states are in really bad shape. You also wrote, it is time to ensure that all elected officials from the local level all the way to the federal level are reminded that all power, capital ALL, is inherent in the people. Are you for term limits and in transparency with the laws that are basically allowing lobbyists to run the politicians? How do you feel about transparency and lobbyists and term limits?
Okay, we'll take them in that order. So transparency, our government is not very good at it. They don't do roll call recorded votes. I'm a firm believer that every level of government should have people on record for how they vote. That would go towards a big way, go towards removing the apathy if people actually see the way their elected representatives vote against the people's interest and vote for businesses or other people's interests. So transparency is a big thing. What was the second one?
Lobbyists.
Lobbyists. That's a sticky wicket. I mean, because I'm a lobbyist, right? You're a lobbyist. If we effectively advocate for specific legislation, we become a lobbyist. We're a citizen lobbyist. I don't believe that there should be some limitations on the amount of corporate funded lobbying. I think the only lobbyists that should be listened to or by government are the people. I mean, because we, the people, we are the sovereign of government. Why are they listening to anybody else but us?
And it is true that a corporation, it may have a branch or be founded here in Tennessee, they can lobby for their interests, no question about it. But when the average lobbying earnings, let's call them, they're not earnings, they're gifts to the politicians in Nashville is $500,000. That's not you and me, unless maybe you are, I shouldn't assume, but that's some powerful money that talks a lot louder than you and I, who may be upset that our school teachers are teaching CRT. That's a hard nut to crack when you want to be heard by your elected leaders.
Absolutely. So I think these corporations should be restricted to only lobbying to the citizen sovereign, right? Put out the commercials, do the advertisements. But if a legislator is in any way, shape, or form benefiting from something that a corporation is doing that is against the interests of the people that put them in office, there's got to be something done about that. And I'm not sure what it should be in our free market capitalist freedom society. It's something that has to be dealt into, but I think more transparency on that process would go a long way towards reducing it.
Yeah, it is definitely complex. And then term limits.
Term limits. I differ with a lot of people on the right with this. So, term limits, there's already a system in place for it. It's called the voting booth. If we, the people, and just a few of us, lobby government to impose upon themselves term limits, isn't that just the citizen asking government, ooh, govern me harder, baby, because I'm giving up my right to remove you from office to legislation? The people need to start exercising that. Why are we asking for legislation to do what we are supposed to do? Again, it's apathy and laziness of the voter. So I
Yeah, the
don't believe
greatest
in
term limit is to
legislation.
vote them out. You're absolutely right. And it just unfortunately, with apathy and low voter turnout, you get a career politician who basically graduates from community college and never leaves the Senate until they're 95 years old on a gurney. So
Right. So transparency would go a lot to alleviating the other two.
it would indeed. I like the sound of your campaign slogan, which was restore constitutional principles to our local, state, and federal governments. How would we do that?
By getting rid of the apathy and holding them accountable, by showing up and participating in our system of self-governance. Government has gotten away with doing what they have been doing for more than 100 years now because we, the people, are not interested. We just want to be left alone. Those people that want to be left alone or say, hey, they're not doing anything directly to me, I ask them to look at their paychecks. I ask them to look at the fees and the fines and the taxes that they pay, and then really ask themselves, is government leaving me alone? And it's not. Government doesn't leave any of us alone. There is
And
not an aspect of our society untouched by them.
we're not the leave me alone state. We're the volunteer state. We are supposed to be founded on an idea of getting actively engaged, like
Right.
Lafayette had said, or de Tocqueville.
Right.
Now, down to the ground level here, you've called for Commissioner Penny Schwinn, what you called her. She is bringing California values and curriculum to our state. As well, she is allowing Dr. Lisa Piercy to market the EUA, Emergency Use Authorization vaccine, to minors. Both of them need to go. Governor Lee appointed her, and she did, as he did the new health commissioner from Kentucky. He likes to emphasize he's born and raised in Tennessee soil. Why did he need to look in California and Kentucky for folks in his cabinet? Why not right here?
Well, if you look into Bill Lee's first run for governor, he wasn't properly vetted by the people of the state at all. While he was a businessman, there was not a Democrat cause he was not committed to donating money to. He was not properly vetted. There was much better opponents in that primary system, but he won it. And you could just see by his appointments where he's not a conservative. By no means is he a conservative. He will play one occasionally on TV to get something passed that he wants, like constitutional carry that he calls. What is that bill that he put in is just, it's not constitutional. It's not even open carry. It's permitless carry. I mean, it just provides an exception or a defense to the law. If we wanted to be a true constitutional carry state, we would just change the code that says with the intent to go armed. If you just erase those from the code, we are now a constitutional carry state. But it is actually illegal in this state to carry a club or firearm with the intent to go armed. Does that sound like constitutional carry to you?
No, because you should just carry the Constitution and say, why do you have that firearm? Because I have the right to, written right here
Right.
in the Second Amendment.
It's the first law of nature, our right to self-defense.
But we do have a problem here, and I'm not going to justify this. I just want to ask your opinion. In the last 25 years, before you and I both got here, long before I got here, there were more than 200 murders a year in Memphis, several times, not every year, several times, but never anything like 332 murders, which was a 49% increase in 2019. That's a lot of murder. New York City's population of 8.3 million had 319 murders that same year in 2019, 450 in 2020, 292 in 216 and 2,262, and that is a correct number, in 1989. Now, we all know the Memphis PD and their new chief of police, C.J. Davis, who left Atlanta to come here and is from North Carolina, reduced the standards of the cops they hire, and we got a terrible tragedy, a murder by cops on a guy. And it's not really fair to talk about a county that you're not from, I guess, but you are a Tennessee resident. What do you think the solutions for murder capital of the world, Memphis, are?
Who's running that? Are they enforcing the current restrictive, mostly unconstitutional gun laws that are on the books? Or, I mean, an armed society, a well-armed society, is a polite society. When you make gun carrying off limits, you open, are criminals going to obey the law? Absolutely not. So you've created these gun-free zones that the federal government passed back in the 90s. What has that done to mass shootings in our country since the 90s?
Soft targets.
Right. You've created a target-rich environment where you know that you're going to go get some notoriety because you're going to get the highest body count before you yourself are killed. Right? We have this mental illness problem. That's what's got to be addressed, not restricting the law-abiding citizens' right to protect themselves. So these Democrat-run, or just, I keep saying Democrat, but they're really communist. These communist-run enclaves throughout our country are the highest murder enclaves in our country because of their restriction of the private ownership by law-abiding citizens of their right to keep and bear arms. If you don't see too many mass shootings in places like gun shows where a lot of people are armed, right? Have you ever heard of a mass shooting occurring at a gun show?
Not yet.
Right. Because the mentally ill person will not go in there because they will be killed instantly, right?
Yeah.
And then mental illness, I think, is a large part of these guns and these tragedies, these mass shootings everywhere. And the mental illness problem in our country directly results from the federal Department of Education's dumbing down and the confusing of children for the past couple of generations.
It does bother me seeing when you go into a Nordstrom's, for example, just to pick on them, and you have the no gun allowed here in a state that's supposed to be, like you said, constitutional carry, which really isn't. And it's just very confusing. Right. And then what's the number one crime? It's breaking into cars and stealing guns.
Right.
Because you're not allowed to bring it inside.
Exactly. So criminals are not going to obey gun-free zones. Criminals are not going to obey extensive, costly background checks. So who is going to be the better armed in our society? The criminals.
And
if the criminals
police
are better armed, and defund the police, that's just terrible. And that, I think that's what happened, sort of plays into what happened in Memphis with the lowering of standards, the demonizing of a specific job, cops all over our country for the past few years now. You've demonized them, you've lowered the standards. What do you get? You get six rogue cops. Doesn't matter their skin color. It's not a skin problem. It's a sin problem.
And there may be some gangland backgrounds in those officers as well.
Exactly. I mean, with the video, the audio from those videos, those were not very professional sounding people at all.
No.
That you would expect to be in law enforcement. I lost count of the F-bombs dropped in that thing.
That, and they were giving very confusing instructions, which he couldn't possibly keep up with all the compliance, and it all spiraled out of control, and they went thuggish on them. Yeah.
Yeah.
So like me, Larry is now a podcaster where he invites you to lean in with him as he discusses how our liberty as American citizens is slowly disappearing, like we're doing right now. The different types of leadership and how it is needed to restore our republic, the lies our government and media spoon feed you on a daily basis. What have you learned from your guests about Tennessee in that show?
What I've learned mostly is that Tennessee has been duped into believing we are truly a red state. If you could just, the mix of legislation proposed in our General Assembly now is half liberty protecting, half liberty eroding. There's quite a few great candidate or great elected officials up there that are true servant leaders. And that's the type of leadership we need in government. That's the type of leadership our founding fathers envisioned, that the farmer, the mercantile owner, the business owner, they would go to government, serve for 2 years and go home, right? Because they would do not expand the size and scope of government like our current brand of career politicians have. So we got a few of them up there, but most of the people in this state believe we are a red state, and we are.
I wish they could all be like Andrew Jackson and John Jay Hooker, but they're not. So I want to ask you this. Marsha Blackburn and Bill Hagerty, they seem to be doing a good job as far as senators go, at least on TV. I'm not a fan of the 17th Amendment allowing direct vote for senators anyway, but that's a different story. You know, much too much opportunity for corruption versus the old way of doing it, like we just talked about. So, but Senator Blackburn joined 17 of her Republican colleagues this week in introducing a bill requiring the Secretary of Defense to offer reinstatement to service members who were fired over the military's COVID-19 vaccine mandate. That's beautiful. How do you feel about those two?
50-50 on both of them. I've looked into their campaign donations, and their campaign contributions from questionable organizations such as Pfizer, that's a lot. I mean, Hagerty, when he was running, he got a large amount of money from Pfizer when he originally ran. So again, these people are beholden to something other or somebody other than the citizens that elected them. And I'm like you, the 17th Amendment, just like the 16th, eroded federalism.
Yes, sir.
And federalism is what made our country so great to begin with. And now look at it.
Yep, it's, that and the income tax, same time.
Right.
Cameron Sexton and Jack Johnson, any feelings about Speaker and Senate Majority Leader?
Speaker Sexton has done some questionable things. I don't think he's a conservative. Jack Johnson, I think because he narrowly defeated Gary Humble, I think that pushed him a little bit more to be more conservative, like his constituents asked for. So, I mean, you have to look at the silver lining. I wish Gary Humble had been elected and went to the Senate because we could have a true liberty fighter up there. But I think his almost beating Jack Johnson forced Jack Johnson to be conservative, forced him to actually
put a little
listen.
Fear in him to get him back to the middle,
absolutely,
back to the right. Yeah.
So I think it's a good thing that people like Gary. I mean, I don't want to pat my back, but people like the average everyday citizen here in Tennessee needs to take on the machine, and they need to show people that there is a difference between adhering to constitutional principles and following an oath. I mean, I've got 30 plus years of following an oath to the Constitution. These people in Nashville and Washington, D.C., I think they just signed that piece of paper just because they think it's a direct deposit form or something, because they don't know what an oath is. They don't know what the Constitution says.
We had Brian Ritchie on the show, and he seems like, you know, having to travel the furthest distance to get to Nashville just to keep up with it. Somebody like you're talking about, a constitutional conservative who doesn't really want to be doing this, but a citizen servant that we would want, right?
He felt the call, and I met him a couple of weeks ago at an event here in Sevier County that Empowered Sevier put on. It was a wonderful event. It does show people that there are other grassroots events out there or grassroots organizations out there that all you got to do is give 10 minutes of your time, and that's all it takes. People that are afraid to get involved, all you need is 10 minutes of your time. Make a phone call, send a letter. Yeah. Let these people know that we're the sovereign. You work for us.
Yeah, if we could overcome the apathy first, then we probably have a lot more energy behind that type of thing. Governor Lee and Lieutenant Governor Randy McNally. Randy was only the second Republican Tennessee Senate Speaker in modern history, and the first from Anderson County in nearly 150 years. I found that interesting. Mm-hmm. People forget, like I said earlier, it wasn't long ago Tennessee was a majority Democratic state. Do you think Lee and McNally represent the Republican platform and party well?
They represent the state Republican Party, again, which I think is very corrupt because of extra constitutional requirements and the incumbent protection that they're in. I don't think very many Republicans in the state of Tennessee would actually pass muster if compared to the stated or printed national GOP platform. In fact, most of the GOP members of the U.S. House and Senate wouldn't pass muster if you looked at and read the platform of the GOP.
Right.
But I think they are definitely not conservatives. They
Both
don't believe
the
in the Constitution
and the platform, I think, get overlooked quite a bit once they get in there and they start looking around and saying, who can I represent here? The people, maybe the first term, second
right.
term, a little less. By the third term, forget
They're
it.
Fully bought by interests, yes.
Now, Congressman Mark Green, Republican, Tennessee of 07, District 7, he reintroduced the Medical Improvement and State Flexibility Act in the 118th Congress just Monday. He said, my Medicaid Improvement and State Flexibility Act allows states to innovate and provide better solutions for those on Medicaid. Green's bill would authorize state to begin pilot programs that give Medicaid recipients a swipe card with dollars on it designed for medical purchases, with the remaining balance on the card returned to the holder at the end of the year in the form of an earned income tax credit. Any thoughts on Mark Green's bill?
A gigantic waste of government money, taxpayers' sweat equity, that is completely open to fraudulent use.
Good. Well said. How hard would it be to disconnect federal funds from hospitals and schools and become a financially independent state without risking like a civil war again? Of course, would that even be desirable?
I think it's highly desirable, because if we look at the Constitution's enumerated powers, there's very little stated in there about the government's ability to control our health care. In fact, there's nothing in there. The federal Constitution, the federal government, has no business within our health care. It's not listed as one of their enumerated powers yet. It's something that they've assumed, and they've done it again through the 16th Amendment by getting more money so it grows them. I think there is.
I've heard it defended under the general welfare.
All right, because general welfare is completely misinterpreted, because people think of it as welfare. Back in the Federalist Papers, when they said the general welfare of the United States, that meant the good credit standing of the United States. They could tax to make sure that the federal government didn't default on its debts. And remember, back when that was passed, the Constitution was ratified, the federal government was only funded by tariffs, not an income tax.
No, not until 1913.
So general welfare clause abused.
Sorry, what about a real estate property tax cap? You know, in Wyoming, they just got a 30% one. I just heard of somebody a little south of here getting a 30% hike on their property taxes. What would you think of a real estate property tax cap?
I would think a tax. I think, well, here's the general premise of all my thinking on taxes, taxation. It's theft, right? Government is performing extra constitutional duties and using our money to do that, and then to continue their further growth. So what amount of money from the property owners is actually needed for the proper functioning of government? That's what should limit the taxes. This extra stuff that's all in there, I mean, it could lower the tax rate effectively for everything. So taxation is theft, and its only purpose is to grow the size and scope of government.
Yeah, and pay their friends. State Rep. Bud Halsey from Kingsport's new bill that would require parents to opt their children into surveys and curriculum. What it does is, right now, if you have a student at school, most schools in this state, and there's a curriculum that a lot of times is really controversial depending on whose worldview is teaching it, but generally they surround health issues and those kinds of things. And right now, if you don't want your kids going to those classes, you have to opt out of it and make sure you fill out the forms to opt your kid out, blah, blah, blah. What this bill does is it turns it around and says that if you want your kids to participate in these programs, you have to opt into it. Otherwise, your kid doesn't take it. Thoughts on the need for that bill?
Vastly needed and about time. Government, again, public education is a branch of government, and they rely on apathy to grow their size and scope and intrusion into our lives. By an opt-out, they're putting the onus on the people to actually pay attention. So they're guaranteed that the apathy is allowing them to do that. But if they require an opt-in, that will actually get parents to pay attention to what's going into their children's head. I'm a firm believer that the public education in our country is A, it's unconstitutional for the federal government to be involved, and B, it is so far from its roots. All of this curriculum that's involved right now is just terrible. It's corrosive, it's sexualizing, it's It's just divisive. It should not be happening. What happened to reading, writing, arithmetic, right? Now we have social emotional learning, critical race theory, all of this stuff to make the whole child better. Well, the whole child is for the parent to develop, not the school, and not the test, government.
And the test scores continue to go down, 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 down. Right. Well, I knew I was going to run out of time with you. I got too many pages of questions because I wanted your take on this. But let me see if I can get through. We got about 5 minutes left. Okay. Yesterday, Health Subcommittee Representative William Lamberth, Republican, 44, Portland, the sponsor of the bill on the House side, has legislation that would effectively make illegal any medical treatments that would permanently change the physical bodies of underage persons who are experiencing gender dysphoria, either through surgery or homegrown treatments. And that moved one step closer to becoming law in the state of Tennessee. HB 0001, as introduced, prohibits a healthcare provider from performing on a minor or administering to a minor a medical procedure if the performance or administration of the procedure is for the purpose of enabling a minor to identify with or live as a purported identity inconsistent with the minor's sex. How do you feel about that one?
I feel it's a long way and a step to protecting children. It's gone a long way. We need to do that. I mean, children need to be protected, and especially need to be protected from government and corporations. This gender affirming care is really just a cash cow for hospitals and medical treatment because it's a lifetime commitment to further treatments and further surgeries. Why are we doing this for a mental illness? It's gender dysphoria. You treat that with psychological treatment. You don't treat it with surgery or medication. You treat it with counseling and other such things. You don't permanently disfigure a child. It's almost like, you know, a suicide is a permanent solution to a short-term problem. Right. Gender-affirming surgery is a permanent solution to a short-term problem. And we should be in the business of protecting people, protecting children. And sometimes we have to protect them from their parents.
But there is money in it, and it's usually long-term care. So you get them on that track of painkillers and depression meds and whatever for the rest of their lives, and you got yourself a customer. Okay.
Absolutely.
State Senator Rusty Crowe from Johnson City and filed Senate Bill 0420 on January 24th last week. The companion House Bill 0771 is sponsored by State Representative John Holtzclaw from Elizabeth, District 4, and was filed on January 30th that would update the state seal to include the words "In God We Trust." You like that, right?
Absolutely. I mean, but it gets in the line of what business of it is the government. A lot of people right now are advocating, hey, we need to bring God back into our schools. I agree. But if we did that right now, who are the people going to be teaching our children about God? Well, godless, communist, whatever's, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So this is a slow roll. It aligns with what's already on our monetary policy. You know, it's printed on our coins and our bills. I don't see anything wrong with it, but it's a fight we don't need to be engaged in right now. It's a fight that could take the back burner to intrusion of government into the people's lives. That's the bill, or that's the battle, or the hill we have to die on. We have to get government out of our lives. Then they could settle all with this petty naming and logos and stuff. But right now, we just have to get them out of our lives and restore our basic constitutional principles, not only at the state, but also at the federal level.
Right. Let me ask you this then. Last question. The China Trade Relations Act, which would strip China of its permanent national trade representation, was filed by U.S. Senators Tom Cotton, Republican Arkansas, Rick Scott, Florida, Ted Budd, North Carolina, and J.D. Vance, Ohio. Tennessee has maintained a significant trade relationship with China since 2007 when Governor Phil Bredesen established an international economic development office in Beijing called the Tennessee-China Development Center. Despite growing tensions between China and the United States, Tennessee continued efforts to recruit Chinese investment through late 2020. Now that's all changed. Quote, as we sit here today, the state is not actively recruiting Chinese companies to come to Tennessee. And for those companies that are already in Tennessee that are of Chinese ownership, we are not offering new incentives to those companies. Economic and Community Development Commissioner Bob Rolfe told Main Street Nashville in an interview. That's quite a reversal from September 2020 when Tennessee's Beijing Trade Office jointly organized an investment summit with the Investment Promotion Agency of China's Ministry of Commerce. Rolfe and Governor Bill Lee spoke to attendees in Beijing via video message about a year ago. Governor Lee called and asked to close our ECD Chinese office in Beijing, Rolf said during a recent interview. Any opinion on Tennessee and China relations? And do you think Senator Nicely from your district, Sevier's bill to limit foreign ownership of Tennessee land and percent of state money that can come into an election can pass?
I absolutely believe that. Well, this is what I know from 30 years of active duty. China is our enemy. Regardless of what we think, feel about relations, they're our enemy. We need to sever all economic, because they have a stranglehold on us, just like the federal government has a stranglehold on us economically. We need to sever all ties. And this limiting of out-of-state contributions to campaigns, I'm all for, but I mean, it might affect people like me whose family donates, and my family doesn't all live here. Mm-hmm. So there's a fine line to walk with that campaign contribution limits, because I have family and friends all over the United States. I have a wide network of former shipmates I served with that donated to my campaign. It was not much, but still, if we're limiting that, we're limiting political speech, just like this other bill that's up in front of the House and the Senate right now that seeks to donate or designate advocacy groups as political action committees if they do certain amount of money greater than $2,000 advocating for or against the measure or for or against two or more candidates. If you're limiting political speech, what's the end role of that? I mean, what's the end game?
Probably back to that same three primaries to become a Republican Party member. They're limiting the scope to say Tennessee is an island amongst itself. Well,
right.
Larry, thank you for your time. We really appreciate you. Love to have you back some other time. I got a lot more questions. So we are at the end here. Just tell our listeners where they can go and find you, hear your podcast, help you with any of your causes.
Okay, well, thanks for having me on. My website is libertyleadershipandlies.com. I publish occasional blogs just pointing out the hypocrisy of government and the lies they tell us. I also have a weekly podcast, as we mentioned before. It's called Liberty, Leadership, and Lies with Larry Linton. It's a little alliteration that my daughter came up with. That's why L5. That's that good marketing degree I paid for.
There you go.
But the podcast is once a week, every Friday. And thank you again for having me on.
Excellent. Thanks for coming. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Talk to you later.
Welcome to the Steve and Steve segment of our show, where we cover what we just heard. Producer Steve, happy Groundhog's Day. I always love this holiday because my birthday is tomorrow. So I'm doing this show for you guys on my birthday eve. What did you think of our guest, Larry Linton?
Well, he knows his constitution. Having served 30 years in the military, he understands the importance of role and command and authority. And holding to a constitutional, I mean, he would be the kind of person, if he was told by his superiors, go do this, and he's going, that's not lawful, that's not right, he would be the kind of person who'd say, no, I'm not going to do this. And now he's taken this same attitude, and he's applied it to looking at what's going on there in the politics. He ran for an office, and if he ever runs again, definitely have to get him back on. But we need people like Larry and yourself and others. Steve, it's going to be you and others that are igniting, like a lot of your guests, igniting Tennessee to get back. And a very important point he pointed out was, it's not the red state. It has more in common, that red has more in common with communism than it does the GOP conservatism and constitutionalism. And we need to bring back the Constitution as the number one focus in the state of Tennessee.
34 pages in a little small version. That's all it is. So when you say know your Constitution, it's not the Bible. It's not the Encyclopedia Britannica. You know, you can't see it because of the green screen. It's 34 pages, not counting the Declaration of Independence. It shouldn't be hard for everybody to read it, learn it, live by it, appreciate it. According to a December 5th, 2022 postmortem on the midterm elections by Kenny Cody in the National Pulse, Republicans humiliate cultural Marxists and win elections. Here's how. Subtitle, there's so much that nationwide conservatives can learn from the volunteer state. My state. Evidently, the Republican Party has a voter turnout and motivation problem. In these past midterm elections, Democrats did not turn out in record numbers, but rather Republicans failed to drive out their base and failed to convince independents to vote for them. Republicans often ran on nothing more than generic campaign talking points and headlines that quickly sounded like white noise to already exhausted likely voters. Let's hear clip number one.
Voting numbers out that were seen in Georgia, as I mentioned, first day turnout nearly double what it was back in 2018. That's pretty astounding in and of itself. What does this say about what we're going to see play out in Georgia over the next couple of weeks?
That's right, Yasmin. This is record-breaking midterm turnout here in Georgia on the first day of early voting. It was, as you note, almost double of what it was in 2018 and just a few thousand votes lower than what it was in 2020, which is a presidential election year. And since then, we've seen some updated numbers come in. It is now upwards of 172,000 in terms of the early vote numbers. Now, what does this all mean? I met earlier today, sat down with a prominent Republican who's aligned with Herschel Walker, and he said that this is a real wake-up call for Republicans for the simple reason that historically we've seen early voters are predominantly Democrats. This shows what we've suspected in the data, what we've seen in the data for some time now, which is that 2022 is shaping up to be an unusual midterm year in that both parties are energized and mobilized. Usually the president's party is demobilized and the party out of power is mobilized. And this Walker advisor said it shows Republicans need to get their act together to turn out as many of their base voters as possible, you know, who we know are predominantly election day voters. And in that Senate race, Walker, the Republican challenging Raphael Warnock, the Democrat, it still needs to win those independents, those center-right voters, those soft Republicans who are leaning in the polls toward Warnock right now. That's why he has a roughly 3 to 4 percentage point lead in the polls. Whereas in the governor's race here in Georgia, we're seeing a very different dynamic. It's the Republican incumbent governor, Brian Kemp, who leads Democratic challenger Stacey Abrams in a rematch of 2018. Abrams has struggled with that same group of independents who painted the state from red to blue. And she's pulling out all the stops, trying to mobilize Democratic voters, trying to inspire the base with an aggressive agenda. Those early voting numbers look good for Democrats at this moment, if history holds true and early voters continue to be predominantly Democrats. But we are looking at a very high turnout election in Georgia, which could be decisive once again, as it was in 2020 in the battle for control of the Senate. Yasmin.
That's Georgia.
Yeah, voter turnout motivation problem is this article is talking about. So they didn't have that. Stacey Abrams got her ass kicked, but Brian Kemp won by a landslide, but Herschel Walker did not. Back to the article. Many have looked to Florida or New York for best practice or how their Republican ticket united to win groundbreaking races across their respective states. But in terms of solid national conservative policy that voters had the confidence to vote on and support, no state had a better record or reliability than Tennessee. In 2022, Tennessee Republicans increased their margins across the board in terms of state, in terms of share of the vote. Governor Bill Lee, Tennessee's Republican congressional delegation, and constitutional amendments prioritizing GOP issues dominated the headlines statewide. Let's hear clip number two.
And finally, I thank my Father God, who has blessed me in more ways than I could ever have imagined. Let me say thank you again to the voters of Tennessee. Thank you for trusting me with your vote. Thank you for believing in a positive vision for the state of Tennessee. Thank you for believing that we can take this state from good to great. It's a tremendous, humbling honor to be your next governor of the state of Tennessee.
You know, he's got a lot of young people there. That bodes well.
Yeah. That was Governor Lee accepting his re-election to governor. About two decades ago, Tennessee was more like Kentucky, often supporting Democrats in state government positions while voting for Republicans in presidential and federal elections. That changed in 2010 when the GOP took over the state house, state senate, and the governorship during the midterm elections. They haven't given it back since. Why? Because under their leadership and representation, Tennesseans have witnessed real economy prosperity. More businesses strive to create jobs and give back revenue to the state than at any time in history. The income tax has been done away with since 2014, and citizens are thriving with laws such as the Right to Work Amendment passing during this past midterm. Republicans in the state government also worked after the COVID-19 pandemic to work on legislation to cut down on bureaucratic authority, overriding local and municipal decision-making. In both a constitutional amendment ballot measure in 2022 and a law Governor Bill Lee signed in 2021, the state legislature ensured that the oppressive power that Tennessee's bureaucracy wielded had during the pandemic was never able to harm Tennessean families again. The state's economic and small government approaches aren't the only reasons for inspiration when motivating Republican voters. The primary purpose is that the state legislature has the audacity to not bow to the mob regarding their passion for enacting national and socially conservative policy. In the past 5 years, Tennessee has stood for social conservatism more than many states in the nation. The legislature enacted laws to ban abortion in all cases besides the mother's life, allowing constitutional carry statewide, and allowing private adoption agencies to decide if families meet their religious criteria before agreeing to an adoption. Without the fear of public backlash or cancel culture, many in the GOP legislature have refused to back down regarding policies or positions they feel impact Tennessee families. When state house leadership learned about Tennessee's marquee hospital, Vanderbilt University Medical Center, promoting and enacting genital mutilation surgeries for those with transgender orientations, they spoke out and took action in droves. Many participated in an event organized by conservative commentator Matt Walsh called the Rally to End Child Mutilation. The gathering was headlined by various conservative activists and legislators who pledged to do anything they could to protect children from groomers and gender ideologues. Let's hear Matt on the next clip.
Thank you so much. And for, among other things, illustrating how journalism can be a force for good, I think yours has been. Have you spoken to anyone at Vanderbilt Hospital about this directly?
Well, Vanderbilt Hospital, I mean, we reached out for a statement when we first published the report, and at first they didn't want to give a statement, and they actually just took down, as you mentioned, they just deleted. That's what people have to understand. They deleted their entire transgender clinic website. They wiped it from existence. And then today, not to us, but in general, they released a statement. And the interesting thing about the statement they released is that they do not, while they start by claiming there's misinformation and so on, they don't actually factually dispute anything in my report, because they can't, because everything that I said wasn't me saying it. I was just providing video evidence, much of which you played there. Well, we know for a fact, this is an absolute fact, that Vanderbilt, they perform double mastectomies on minor girls, on children. They chemically castrate children, and they give them irreversible hormone drugs that change their bodies permanently. They're doing all of that to kids. And the other thing we should note, and I'm glad you mentioned all the other hospitals around the country, because the things I just mentioned, that's happening all across the country, in every single state, in many hospitals, and in many other medical clinics. All of those things are happening. And one of the reasons why it's allowed to keep happening is because people don't know about it, because they're not talking about it. And I think for a lot of average Americans, people just walking down the street, it's sort of unthinkable. They can't imagine that this sort of thing is actually happening. But it is, which is why we have to start by raising awareness about it. And we have to do that no matter the game the left plays, by saying if you so much as mention what they're doing, yeah, it's incitement and terrorism, which is absurd. But we can't bend to that tactic. We have to keep shining a light on this.
Exactly. And that's what you've been doing, Steve.
Thank you. You too. More recently, a prominent member of state house leadership spoke out against the clothing brand Balenciaga in response to the brand's ad campaign that promoted grotesque sexual imagery of children. Remember that? House GOP caucus chairman Jeremy Faison stated on Twitter that he would do his part to keep these creeps from obtaining a business license and called the company groomers themselves. Even though I'm on the libertarian side of political leanings and I always want more business to come to our great state, I desire to protect children first. I will do my part to keep these creeps from obtaining a business license. November 29th, 2022. This brand of fearlessness is precisely what so many conservative leaders across the country lack. Tennessee is now an example of how Republicans should govern. Instead of running on generic and uninspiring talking points, Republicans should model themselves after volunteer state conservatives, fighting the culture war and passing legislation that defeats the cultural Marxism everyday families openly reject. What do you think of that article, Steve?
I think he's doing a great job, and I think we need to follow what he's saying. I think you're all part of that. That's the whole thing that birthed this whole show and your paper and all that you're doing is to shine a light and get people back on track.
Yeah, and the Chattanooga Times Free Press had this to say: Tennessee, which led the nation in economic growth in 2021, was displaced last year by Idaho as the state with the fastest growing economy, according to estimates by the U.S. Bureau of Economic Analysis through the first three quarters of last year. But the government agency said the volunteer state ranked second among all U.S. states in gross domestic product growth in 2022, rising nearly 2.5 times as much as the rest of the country. The nonprofit study group CivMetrics estimates Tennessee's economy grew by 4.5% last year to a record $368.6 million of output. Tennessee's population growth last year outpaced the nation as a whole. And in the fiscal year ended September 30, the Tennessee Valley attracted the second highest investment ever, with more than $10.2 billion of new business growth announced last year. After trailing the national average in economic growth in the previous 3 years, Tennessee led the nation in GDP growth in 2021, growing 8.6% to outpace the national average growth rate of 5.7%. We're doing something right. Tennessee saw its largest population increase since 2007. It was one of the 10 fastest growing states in the country in population data released Thursday by the U.S. Census Bureau. The Tennessee State Data Center said there was a nearly 83,000 gain from 2021 to 2022, a 1.2% population increase. That means that Tennessee surpassed an estimated 7 million residents at 7,051,339. I'm two of them. That's great. But if you're from California, New York, Washington, Oregon, or Colorado, please leave your voting record behind. Stay tuned for my thought of the week. Welcome to my final thought for the week. But before I share, I want to remind everyone to subscribe to Mill Creek View Podcast. Just go to Rumble or Google app and hit the subscribe button and follow us. And thanks for doing it. The best way to find yourself is to lose yourself in the service of others. Mahatma Gandhi. There's no greater challenge and there's no greater honor than to be in public service. Condoleezza Rice. Everyone can be great because everyone can serve. Martin Luther King Jr. There is no higher religion than human service. To work for the common good is the greatest creed. Woodrow Wilson. That's when America soars, when we look out for one another and we take care of each other, when we root for one another's success, when we strive to do better and to do better than the generation that came before us and try to build something better for generations to come. That's why we do what we do. That's the whole point of public service. Barack Obama. That's it for this episode. Really hoped you liked it. Thank you, Larry Linton, for having the audacity to serve others. Until next time, this is your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper. Peace in our time.
Any views or opinions represented on the podcast are personal and belong solely to the creator and do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the creator may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated.